Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Good evening. Welcome to the John Whitmer Show, sponsored by Wink Hartman and the Hartman Group of Companies. My name is Michael Austin, free market economist, filling in for John Whitmer this evening. We are happy to have you joining us tonight. We are here at your local liberal resistance headquarters, where we proudly champion the conservative principles of limited government, individual liberty, free enterprise, and of course, traditional values. Thank you so much for being with us this evening. If you would like to call in, our studio lines are open. You can reach us at 316-869-1330 or by email at john@knssradio.com, on Facebook at The John Whitmer Show, and on X, formerly Twitter, at John R. Whitmer. Reach out. We'd love to hear from you. Well, we have a really great show planned for you tonight. So first off, we're going to have TPPA Honorary Chairman Jenny Beth Martin. She's going to be with us to discuss how Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer bypassed the impeachment trial against Department of Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas this week, effectively shielding Democrat senators from that pivotal, very pivotal vote, definitely dealing with our border crisis in our country. Then we're going to go to President Donald Trump. We're going to discuss the hush money trial of the former president, and we'll talk that over with Michael Letts from InvestUSA. Then we'll bring on Mike Kuckelman. If you don't know who he is the former chair of the Kansas Republican Party. He'll join us to talk about what Republicans can expect from this fall's Republican National Convention and how there's still time to apply if you want to be a state delegate. And then, of course, we'll preview the upcoming legislative veto session with Kansas Speaker of the House, Dan Hawkins. And as always, we will take your calls at 316-869-1330.
And Michael, if I can interrupt you for a second, a little quick programming note. We've already received a question, so I wanted to let folks know. You mentioned Mike Kuckelman. He is the former chair of the Kansas Republican Party. You know, we're in the process. The different congressional districts are selecting their delegates to the RNC. We did reach out to current chair Mike Brown. We reached out to Mike. We reached out to the executive director of the party. Did not hear back from them. I tried to get them to come on the show to talk about the topic. They chose not to. So that's why we've got the former chair instead of the current chair. So I just wanted to let folks know that's why we have the former chair instead of the current chair.
Appreciate that, John. And what's really most important here is we want you to be informed. So how can we make sure we get you the information that you need to know? We will bring in whoever we need to make sure that you have the most up-to-date information if you want to participate in any matter. And on this matter about the Republican National Convention coming up in July, we thought that was something you definitely needed to know about. Well, before we kick off here, I wanted to touch on a couple of things here, and that is the number seven. The number seven. Seven, when I refer to this number, I'm referring to seven major tax relief bills that our governor, Laura Kelly, has vetoed. Seven. That means ever since she's been in office, the Kansas legislature has tried to pass seven major tax relief bills in some way, shape, or form, trying to give back either more money in your wallet, trying to decrease your property tax check that you have to write twice a year, trying to decrease the price of food and services that you might see at checkout. Seven different times the Kansas legislature has tried to pass that on to you. Laura Kelly has instead said no. It goes all the way back to 2019. John, do you remember back in 2017, President Trump passed the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act?
Sure. Yeah. The Democrats all claimed that was, you know, tax cuts for the rich, even though it did benefit all income tax brackets. But yeah, I remember that one.
Rising tide raises all boats. Yep, and it was the most significant tax relief the country has ever seen, probably since Ronald Reagan.
I remember that.
But as I said before, I'm a free market economist. At that time that bill was passed, I was chief economist for Kansas governor housed at the Department of Revenue. And we had to figure out what that tax savings meant for you. And we had discovered about almost $200 million would be going into state coffers just because of Kansas tax law. So even though President Trump passed the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, because of Kansas tax law, some of that money wasn't getting to you. And I realized how much that was, brought it to the legislature, and the legislature wrote a bill to try to get that money back to families and businesses. Laura Kelly vetoed it the first year they introduced it. In fact, technically, in that 2019, they had introduced two bills trying to do that. She vetoed both of them. Then in 2020, the legislature tried to introduce a property tax accountability. I mean, isn't that crazy? Trying to make sure that local leaders are accountable for property tax increases. Laura Kelly vetoed that too. In 2020, during COVID and the economic response to COVID, I don't think it was COVID at all, but it was more government's response to COVID that really killed the economy. The Kansas legislature tried to help out businesses with a loan recovery program. Laura Kelly vetoed that too. In 2021, the legislature tried to bring back that piece of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, trying to maximize those savings back to you. Laura Kelly vetoed it again. This time, though, the legislature finally had enough votes to override it. Then, if you look at 2023, the legislature said, well, let's try to simplify our taxes. Let's try to do a single rate. They tried to push through Senate Bill 169, vetoed. Earlier this year, the House tried another single rate bill, House Bill 2284, another single rate. Vetoed. We're going to have Dan Hawkins by the end to give us, of course, a legislative update. But just recently, the legislature has once again sent another tax relief bill to Laura Kelly, House Bill 2036. This one accelerated food sales tax. It cut your property taxes. It simplified our income tax rates. It exempted Social Security income. What do you think Laura Kelly is going to do?
Huh. Well, and if I don't mean to interrupt you, but, I also have to remind folks, one of the things that this bill that they just passed did was make the sales tax on food zero, effective immediately instead of when it naturally. But if you keep in mind, the sales tax on food would already be zero had Laura Kelly not vetoed that bill three times.
Yes.
So, keep in mind, there's another ad. So actually, it's really not seven. It's 10 times that she has vetoed tax bills. Because she vetoed the sales tax on food three times.
You're exactly right. And so you added three bills that you cared about. I have seven bills that I cared about. You ask another Joe off the street, there might be a whole nother 10 bills that they wanted to see get through the legislature. And odds are our Democrat, progressive, leftist, she's not middle of the road, she is leftist governor, vetoed all of that. So we're going to have Dan Hawkins at the end or near the end of our session here. Obviously give us a legislative update. Definitely talk about taxes and other bills. But I just gave you her history. And as we all know, or at least what I like to know, use as an economist, past behavior is a good a predictor of future behavior. We have a pretty good idea what she's going to do. Now, the question, of course, is why does she keep bringing up these bills vetoing these bills that just make common sense to everybody? And I think ultimately it's because she doesn't care about you. She doesn't care about family. She doesn't care about businesses. This is a great Thomas Sowell quote. The only thing a politician cares for is getting elected. What's number two is getting reelected. And whatever is number three is so far behind. Now, of course, Laura Kelly is term limited, but she wants control. I mean, and that's the leftist party in a nutshell, is they want control. They don't care about the results. They don't care about the consequences. She is petty and she is willing to throw anyone under the bus just to keep that control. Don't believe me? Let's look at this last session. You may or may not be watching this or reading this from the news reports, but let's say this whole tax relief discussion that's been happening this year. Did you know Laura Kelly threw House Democrats under the bus? Why? Well, the Senate had an idea of a tax relief plan. They put some provisions together, but one of their income tax provisions was to leave our three rate bracket structure as it is and just lower the top rate from 5.7 to, I think it was around 5.5 or maybe just 5.55. I can't remember the exact number. House Democrats said that favors the wealthy. Laura Kelly didn't care. She had a meeting with House Democrats where she effectively forced them to eat crow. I don't believe the Democrats' position at all. I think you really should lower taxes, definitely the highest marginal rate, because that's how you grow the economy. You lower the most punitive tax out there. But if you were to believe that the Democrats have principles, then House Democrats were put into a bind and Laura Kelly didn't care. She threw them under the bus anyway. Now, thankfully, House Democrats had, the wherewithal to at least try to stand up for their principles and voted the thing down. But now Laura Kelly is looking at a bill where she wasn't brought into the negotiation. That's 2036, a bill that was bipartisan passed by both the Senate and the House with both Republicans and Democrats. What do you think she's going to do? You know what she also did? She also threw law enforcement under the bus, too, for reasons unknown. I won't get into details on that. I'll let our good speaker talk more about that when we bring him in. But if she vetoes this tax bill, she will throw the entire state under the bus, all because she wasn't invited to the cookout. I mean, just to even take a look at this latest drama with tax revenue estimates. John, did you know Laura Kelly said she's not going to decide on whether she's going to veto until the Kansas Department of Revenue and university economists make a prediction on how tax revenues are going to perform in the state? Did you hear that news?
Oh, I heard it. I heard it.
You would think that sounds reasonable at face value, wouldn't you? Maybe a little bit.
If revenues weren't what she, that's an excuse. That's giving her cover. She's going to veto it, and this just gives her cover.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You're kind of spoiling it. But, you know, it sounds reasonable. It sounds reasonable, except for the fact that the state already has $4.5 billion in state savings already. $4.5 billion. Are you telling me that Laura Kelly thinks that state revenues are going to drop by $4 billion over the next year? No. It's a red herring. It's a scapegoat. It's exactly what you said. She's trying to shift the blame. She's trying to shift the questions. And she's willing to find some way to justify what she wants to do, which is veto. And guess, lo and behold, guess what happened on Friday? Predictions said the state revenues are essentially unchanged. Laura Kelly, if you're listening to this radio program, and I know you do, or at least you have some staffers that do, stop grasping at the straws. Lady, you look out of touch. You look like you are out of the facts. Legislators want to go home to their constituents. Families want to see their next paychecks get a bump, and they want to write a smaller property tax check twice a year. Oh, my goodness. It is in our faces. Laura, sign tax relief and do it now. The hush money trial of former President Donald Trump began Monday, and this is the first time a former president will stand trial over criminal charges. Doesn't that sound like a bad precedent? Sounds like one bad one to me. Jury selection started Monday morning and ended without a single juror selected. The president is accused of using hush money to pay off women he allegedly had affairs with and fraudulently logging the payments as legal expenses. Trump has denied those allegations and called the trial a quote-unquote witch hunt and plans to testify in his defense. The trial, which could last as long as 8 weeks, requires that the presidential candidate has to be in the courtroom throughout the entire proceedings. Joining us now to discuss this trial is Michael Letts, a local law enforcement veteran with over 30 years experience under his belt. Letts is the president, founder, and CEO of Invest USA, an organization that provides bulletproof vests to police officers through various charitable groups and sponsorships. Michael, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
It's always a privilege to be with you. Let me thank you for the opportunity.
Not a problem at all. So, Michael, let's just get the obvious out here. Is this case legitimate, or is this just another attack on a Republican president?
It is a totally illegitimate case. It's nothing but a political vendetta. I think what is ironic is, you know, just yesterday, Abernathy, the attorney for Stormy Daniels in the past, who is serving time for fraud, not just for the issue with Stormy Daniels, but for millions of dollars taken from clients during his legal practice. But interestingly, from jail, he said he will be happy to testify on behalf of President Trump. He feels like he has pertinent information that perhaps the person testifying against the president, Michael Cohen, perhaps had more involvement with Ms. Stormy than we care to discussed. It was actually utilizing money from President Trump, unbeknownst to him, to cover his own indiscretions. So it will be interesting to see how that comes out.
Oh, my. So then tell me more. Who's behind this trial? Tell me the people who are behind this trial. If this is just another, gosh, one more attack on the Republican president, one bad president. Who is pushing this through? Who has the marionette strings, so to speak?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The Democratic Party has been searching for every way possible to make sure that Donald Trump never gets on the ballot. They're scared to death of the possibility of him being reelected as president. And, of course, every poll indicates that that's the case. But what they're doing is anything they can do to make sure that doesn't happen, from charging him to using the President Biden is using his Department of Justice, weaponize it to go after anything they can find, whether it was a classified information that the president has the right to take under the Presidential Records Act, whether it's accusing him of committing an insurrection, which we all know is a hilarious situation from the standpoint. I mean, if you're going to get an insurrection, that's the worst one I've ever seen. You don't do an insurrection. You don't overthrow a government by running in there and just watching, observing what Congress is supposed to be doing.
And take pictures, yes. And take pictures, but go ahead.
So that, or, you know, by saying, hey, you've got fraud in your election process in Georgia, and, of course, being declared, oh, no, this is the most election with the greatest integrity we've ever had, and then now it's coming out. Literally hundreds of thousands of votes were illegal votes in Georgia. So they kind of shot themselves in the foot on that one. So then they got this particular case where they have, of course, the DA, Mr. Braggs, who can't stand President Trump, to take a look at a case. What is the whole crux of this situation? They're saying that the president used campaign funds to silence Stormy Daniels. Well, if that were legitimate, then there would be a problem there because you cannot use campaign contributions for those kind of endeavors. The problem is that it was first complained to the Federal Election Commission, who would have jurisdiction over that. They reviewed it. It could find no probable cause to open up an investigation. However, wanting to cover themselves, they sent it over to the U.S. Attorney's Office for that jurisdiction. Check behind this, make sure. The U.S. Attorney's Office, again, could find no justification and decline the case. So it sat for years, nothing being done because there was no case to be involved. Then the local district attorney decides to take that and make it a state matter, which he has no jurisdiction over. The state has no jurisdiction over federal elections, but tried to stretch it into making it seem like it was campaign contributions, and he failed to disclose that to the state on the state level. They're trying to criminalize that behavior, which everybody who looks at it scratches their head as to how they could even try to reach that far, much less actually present a case.
Yes.
But that doesn't matter to them, because when you look at New York, the area they're trying it at, 90% of those people voted for Joe Biden. So they're hoping they will have a tainted jury that will get a conviction, and then they can have a heyday saying, well, you shouldn't be voting to elect a convicted president.
So then, Michael, let me ask you this. So you spent decades in law enforcement. And by the way, folks, we're talking to Michael Letts from Invest USA. Michael, you spent decades in law enforcement. Is it possible Trump can go to prison?
Technically, yes. Practically, no. Because, first of all, the conviction would have to be appealed. It would be appealed. Obviously, that would have to go to the Supreme Court. It's the first time you've ever had a former president try for such a ridiculous situation. And by the time that got to the appeals process, I'm sure that common sense would prevail and it would be overturned. But they would certainly want to use that the threat that he's going to, during his term, somehow be forced to go into prison during his term. If it's upheld, there's absolutely no possibility that it would be upheld. But it's their scare tactics.
Yeah.
They are trying to get the public to be scared of trying to support President Trump. And you remember, it's not just President Trump. It's anybody who has conservative values. And that's what's so discouraging in this whole particular situation.
That's right. Once they do this to President Trump, they basically made themselves a little rule book to going after anybody else whose opinions they don't like. So I guess what you're basically telling me, the possibility of Trump getting a fair trial or even a fair jury in New York is pretty slim.
It is pretty slim, but it's important. There are some other cases that the president has that are pending before the Supreme Court. Now, one of them is presidential immunity. And he is not arguing for himself. He is arguing for every president. If it gets to the point in this country to where you can go after the president for any decision he makes while president, you're going to have a very lame duck constitutional officer. What you'll have is basically what England has with the king, all show and no go. And that is not what this constitution is about. That's why presidential immunity is so important. The Supreme Court recognizes that. You know, they typically don't take cases away from the lower courts and immediately want to hear them unless they think there's an urgency. They're doing that on this particular case. Of course, what happens if the Supreme Court leans the way it appears to be now, all these cases will go away. There won't be any basis for any of them. There was no basis for any of them to begin with, but it'll just expedite the matter so that justice prevails immediately instead of down the road.
Michael, you are a wealth of knowledge. If folks want to connect with you, where can they find you? Online at investusa.org?
Please, you know, that would be the place, investusa.org. It's a charity.org. All this information is there, and I ask your audience to make sure they do us all a big favor. Tell your first responders wherever you see them tonight, tomorrow, the next day, thank you for your service. We have a great crisis in this country, national security. Morale is lower than it's ever been. They need your support. They deserve your support. God bless you for what you're doing. God bless America. Y'all have a great evening.
God bless you too, Michael. Thank you again for taking the time to join us this evening.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
The 2024 Republican National Convention is scheduled to be held July 15th to the 18th at the Fiserv Forum in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Kansas will be sending a delegation of 39 delegates, 24 at-large, 12 from the four congressional districts, and three automatic delegates. With us now to tell us more about the 2024 convention is Mike Kuckelman, former chair of the Kansas Republican Party. Mike, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Hello, John, Michael, tonight. I about said hello, John, but hello, Michael.
That's okay. I'm here. I'm just, you know, I'm just sitting in a corner.
Well, Mike, let me ask you this. You've been a delegate to the RNC's before. Tell folks, what can they expect if they get chosen to go?
Certainly. So I was a delegate for the 2016 convention and also the 2020 convention. The 2020 convention was set to the side because, remember, that was COVID. It was in Charlotte. We barely were able to have a convention during COVID due to some of the ridiculous mandates. So looking back to 2016, this convention in 2024 will be more along the lines of the 2016. It'll be a great event for Republicans to all come together and throw their support in for President Trump. And I mean, the whole thing, it's a great opportunity. It's a great experience. I mean, some people watch it on television, but Republicans in Kansas that want to participate, they still have time.
Now, as you said, you've been a leader. You've been the state party chair for the Kansas Republican Party. Just full disclosure again, John has reached out to our current chair, Mike Brown. Is that right, John?
Yeah, I reached out to Chairman Brown and to the executive director, tried to get him to come on the show. Didn't get it's not that they said no, they just never responded. So I knew I wanted to have this conversation, and I wanted to have the conversation while there was still time for folks to apply to self-nominate to be a delegate. And so I tried the old college try.
No, you got to do what you can. So I wanted you to preface that because I wanted to ask this. To your knowledge, Mr. Kuckelman, is the leadership prepared for this 2024 convention? At first glance, it would seem like it's going to be no different than 2020, 2016, 2012. But, you know, I've heard some rumors, I've heard some news, and they have made me skeptical. Give us any insight from your perspective and what you've seen for preparation for this year for Kansas delegates.
Well, I share that concern because we're almost into May and we have to pick our at-large delegates, the state committee does. And I want that meeting to be held in person because there's more to this than just picking the state delegates. I mean, we need to get Republican enthusiasm ginned up. And, you know, we should get together and elect these last six. And again, the deadline for that, for people who want to participate, to self-nominate, to be on the ballot, is this Friday, April 26th. But in May, we'll have that meeting. We'll select those six delegates, the six alternates. There's a lot of work to be done between now and July, and I hope that it's being done. If you remember back in 2016, Kelly Arnold at that time was the chair. Kelly Arnold had a couple of people whose full-time job at the convention was to make certain everything was in order for all the Kansas delegates. We had a number of events outside of the RNC events. But every time we'd come back to the hotel, they had food for us. They had drinks for us. Because part of what happens at this convention is builds enthusiasm, which, you know what that's important for, Michael. We build the enthusiasm so we get out the vote. We can't afford to have Republicans stay at home in Kansas. And the risk here is people know that Kansas will go for Trump. I mean, there's no doubt President Trump will get all six Electoral College votes from Republicans. But we have Republicans down ballot that we need to get elected to. So what should happen at the convention is it takes an incredible amount of effort, but it should be an effort to do the primary thing, which, of course, is to nominate President Trump. But the secondary thing is to get people excited, so we get out the vote. And, in fact, I would push that in May, when we go get together to elect, you know, the last six, there should be a seeing red reception or something following that election.
That makes sense.
Because we need Kansans to see how excited those of us in leadership, the delegates and officers, are about this. We can't afford to be ho-hum about this. We can't afford to just do it by Zoom, just to go through the motions. We have to do this in person, and we have to show the rest of the state how excited we are about it, because that drives getting out the vote. If we get out the vote, Kansans will elect Republicans.
So you're exactly right, Mike. Just hearing Zoom for a meeting with over 100 folks already gives me a headache. I don't have any aspirin by the table here next to me. So we're just going to move on and hope that that at-large delegate selection meeting will not be in Zoom and will be by in person. But, John, you have a question?
Well, I don't think there's anything in the rules that we even allow it by Zoom, nor do I think, frankly, with this current, the way that the state party has handled things, you're still waiting on a treasurer's report from the last meeting. You've got unresolved issues with an attempt to disenfranchise minority groups that's still hanging out there. I don't think a Zoom is that even, well, first off, is that even legal in the bylaws? Could he call that? And how would you even logistically handle that in a transparent manner?
Well, I would not advocate for doing any of this by Zoom. I mean, we're Republicans. We get together. But you could. I mean, during COVID, we did have to do it a few times. You can get the state committee to do that if it's necessary. But just the opposite is necessary in 2024.
Right.
We need to meet in person for multiple reasons. We need to clear up some of the things that are going on in the state party. We need to get the party unified.
Yes.
You know, these seeing red receptions that you can have after this vote, you have people from all over the state who are there together who unify. They get to know each other, and you know, we don't have then four congressional districts that are just silos. We meld and develop into one Republican Party in the state of Kansas. But one other thing that it does, you know, we have a lot of young Republicans that they need to be taught to the experience. They need to see how these things work.
Yep. Sure.
Because they're our future leaders. You don't teach people by sitting behind a computer screen. And the last thing I'd say about that, I don't think state party will buy it anyway, because, you know, in Kansas, people are pushing hard. They want paper ballots, they want them hand counted, and they want in-person voting.
Yeah.
If we're going to preach that in Kansas, we have to walk the walk.
Hear, hear.
We have to meet in person, we have to have paper ballots, we have to hand count them, and it's in person. How can we advocate statewide for those types of election integrity if we don't even do it in our own party? We can't be hypocrites. We're going to meet in person, and we're going to do this the right way.
You know, Mike, I was a delegate in 2012 in Tampa, and then I was a delegate with you in 2016 in Cleveland. I've been through that process. I understand. I chose not to put my name forward this time around. I wanted to give somebody else a chance, an opportunity. But I understand that there was some, we didn't have any issues in the 4th District, but I understand there was I'll just say some shenanigans that have gone on in some of the other districts with slates that were inserted with an attempt to disenfranchise. Or are you familiar with what exactly went on, that the state party was trying to basically say throw out the elected ballots or elected? Can you shed any light on that?
Oh, of course I can, because I participated at the third district and I pushed hard against this. I stood up and spoke against it. We couldn't afford to allow this to happen. We had an effort to, for example, in the third district, we had 19 people who wanted to be considered. When we showed up, there was a state-run slate that had the three handpicked people that they wanted, that the state leadership did. And third district pushed back hard against that and voted it down and said that all 19 people who took the time to self-nominate and ask to be considered were going to be considered. The first district did the same thing. Laura Francis, the first district chair, did an amazing job. I've seen the video, watched the video. I was really proud of how she handled a very difficult issue. First district did the same thing. First district said no to the finger on the scale slate. We're going to select our own people. But John, that, and Michael, that brings up an important point. There was a slate also circulating for these at-large slots.
What?
And there were some people saying, well, what's the point of even, you know, putting my name forward if they've already picked, before the nominations even closed, if they've already picked who those six delegates and six alternates will be? And I'm telling people, please go forward, put your name forward if you want to do this, and count on the state committee to say no to some kind of a slate, some pre-selected group of people being pushed through. Those people on the slate, many of them are fine. They should be considered as well, but they should be considered with the people, all of the people who self-nominate. We owe it as a matter of respect to any delegate, any Republican in Kansas that has put their name forward, to consider them and vote on all of the nominees, all the self-nominated people, to select those delegates. That's what we owe it to. We don't do pre-cooked deals in Kansas.
Yep.
And I'm convinced when we meet in May, there will not be a pre-cooked deal. The party won't allow it.
Save double standards for the left, honestly. If we're going to be the party of election integrity, then if we're going to be the party of transparency, then we have to have in-person and hand-counted ballots. And then we also need to not have top-down slates that were selected in back rooms with cigars and brandy and the worst types of...
Hey, I like cigars and brandy.
Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. Well, John wants to do that, but I don't. Mike, if folks want to attend the RNC, like you said, there is still time to self-nominate. They can visit kansas.gop. At the bottom of the page, I believe there is a link to both an online and principal 2024 RNC self-delegation nomination form. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. And they can go there, and basically the nomination form, it asks you why you want to be a delegate, and it asks, you know, what has been your involvement in the Republican Party? Because obviously we want to send Republicans who are experienced. So this is kind of one of the things that you benefit from when you're involved and you help in elections. People want you to be able to be seen and to be the leaders that are sent to represent our great state, the Republican Party, at the national convention. So, yeah, there's still time to do it. People should be signing up.
Mike Kulkelman, former chair of the Kansas Republican Party, thank you again for joining us this evening.
All right. Thank you. Have a good evening.
So, John, you heard our conversation with Mike Kulkelman, chair of the Kansas Republican Party. And then you were also a delegate in a number of years for the convention. What has been your experience and what are your thoughts about this one we have coming up?
2012 in Tampa. For Romney, he was our delegate. He was our nominee.
We're all human. It's all right.
What can I say? And then 2016 in Cleveland, interesting. I mean, fantastic experience. I hope that the state party, you know, what Mike was saying about the events that are surrounding. Obviously, your evenings are busy.
Yes.
Because you've got convention stuff that's going on.
Right.
But it's during the day that the state delegates get together and do things. You know, you take a bus and you go out to, you know, like in Tampa, we went down to the Buccaneers Stadium and there was an event there. In Cleveland, we went out to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You know, there's just all kinds of stuff, and those are events, but the state party is the one that coordinates those. and they find sponsors so that you're not paying for it. So the delegates aren't having to pay for your food, pay for the transportation. That's all on the state party. And I'm hoping that the state party is organized, and not only that they can organize those activities, but then find someone to underwrite those. Otherwise, because it's already expensive. To be a delegate, you've got to pay. It's all, you pay for it all out of pocket. So you pay for your own airfare. You pay for your hotel. You generally don't have to pay for food because all the food you typically, the party, again, the party gets that sponsored. They get it underwritten. Everything, typically.
And we didn't talk about this.
Typically. I don't know about this year.
And we didn't talk about this on the conversation, but, you know, in the last state committee meeting where they're talking about the finances for the state party.
They're broke. I think they had, what, negative $7,000 or something like that. If you can believe them. Remember, they didn't have a treasurer's report. So I just don't know. And I'll be honest with you, that's one of the reasons why I didn't submit my name, because I just wasn't sure. So, I mean, it's a lot of fun. It's an incredible privilege to be a delegate. But I'm optimistic. Let's just put
it
that
boy.
Way.
Oh, boy. Well, thanks for that, John. Let's switch it around. I asked you a question, John, before the break.
Yep.
Do you have one for me?
Ah, sure. So I follow you on Twitter. Speaking of which, you've plugged my Twitter feed. Go ahead and plug your own.
Oh, okay. You can follow myself, Michael Austin, KS Economist, at KS Economist on either Facebook or Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, to follow my latest ramblings on whatever's going on in the state and country.
So you tweeted out something this week with Casey Mayor Quentin Lucas announcing his plans to make Casey a, quote, sanctuary city, and thanking Denver mayor for trailblazing. And news in news in Denver is going to be looking into the future. And it was related to this story, and you'll have to kind of tell my listeners about it. But basically, from what I understand, I haven't filled in Kansas City in a few weeks, but from the gist of what I've read, this is Kansas City, Missouri.
Yeah,
Mayor Quentin Lucas, who is a raging liberal. And what's funny is I've talked with Pete Mundo because, you know, I fill in for Pete a lot up there. And he somehow gets Quentin Lucas on his station, which I don't understand how he gets that.
Well, that's economics, first and foremost, because I think KCMO talk radio out in KC is just growing. It's just skyrocketing. And so if Quentin Lucas wants to get his voice heard, he needs to talk to Pete Mundo.
Pete Mundo. Okay. Well, that's how but I've talked to Pete about Lucas. And, I mean, Lucas is pro gun control. He's radical transgender, you know, alphabet mafia guy. And now he's come out and he said, essentially what he said was that we being Kansas City, needs more workers, needs more labor. And so he's making it a sanctuary city. They want migrant labor. And has he not learned the lesson of what's happened in all of these cities that have gone to sanctuary city policies and then been inundated? I mean, my first thought was great. Tell Texas and Florida, let them start shipping busloads up into Kansas City.
Oh, goodness.
And let them see how that feels. The problem is they're just going to flow into Kansas City, Kansas.
So you're exactly right, John. So I think Kansas City just passed a budget, and in that budget they had millions of dollars that they appropriated towards bringing in illegal aliens into Kansas City.
I didn't know they did that.
Well, that was the impetus for this. Why he's making this this press release, right? He has it in the budget. It got passed where they're going to spend taxpayer funds on illegal aliens,
like New York is doing,
housing
incentives and that kind of stuff,
like Denver is doing
for illegals.
And so he is thanking that New York City mayor. He's thanking the Denver mayor. Thank you for trailblazing this.
Yeah, thank you for giving away our money to illegals.
Meanwhile, Kansas City residents are just looking at this saying, do you not watch the news? I mean, we're seeing crime. We're seeing police being attacked. We're seeing Lake and Riley, right? The poor girl who was murdered by an illegal alien. And you're telling me you want to bring all of that to Kansas City, a city that is already a crime-infested hole? I mean, don't forget. Let's not forget about the Chiefs parade, right? The shooting at the Chiefs parade.
Yeah,
this is before any illegals were invited into the city. That place already has crime problems, and he just wants to double down.
So what's his thought? I mean, is he that desperate for labor? Are they having a labor? Well, all cities, I think, are struggling to. They've got unemployment issues. They're having, and it's not that people. It's just people don't want to work. But I think that's a side effect of COVID to an extent. But why would he think that the solution is illegals?
I don't think it's a labor issue. I think he's trying to find the best scapegoat to justify his progressive plan. He wants to say that there's a labor issue, yet the economics says more and more Missourians and Kansans are moving to the metro area than ever before. It is not a labor issue. It is a scapegoat. He is using that as a reason to justify what he wants, which is to make Kansas City a sanctuary city. And everybody knows that it's going to spill over and make everybody's spill over into Kansas and make everybody's life worse off.
Well, and the other thing that would frustrate me if I was a voter is, first off, my taxpayer dollars going to illegals. But he just lost rather significantly in that referendum on the Chiefs and the Royal Stadium project.
Yes.
So clearly taxpayers aren't wanting more taxpayer handouts for stuff. And now here you have taxpayer money. It's one thing to ask the taxpayers to pay for a stadium that at least they can use. Here you're going to give taxpayer money to illegals?
And where's he going to put them? He's going to put them in...
Apparently in the stadiums.
You know, that might be a bad idea from him. He's probably going to put him in the stadiums, no. But what's the New York City mayor doing? He's taking five-star hotels and he's putting migrants in there. Denver's doing the exact same thing. And then they're all dealing with issues where their own law enforcement doesn't trust them. In New York City, you have law enforcement turning their back on Eric Adams up there. And they already have a strained relationship here in Kansas City, and he just wants to add more fuel to that fire.
And what's been the response from the general public to this? I mean, what's Mundo saying? What are his listeners saying? Or is this basically just getting swept under the rug?
I think Mundo did a good job in pushing back, saying, what the heck are you doing? But I guess time will tell, right? Because right now we're just dealing with an appropriation and a talking point. But now we're going to see whether Quentin Lucas really wants that type of trouble coming into Kansas City, knowing that he already is quite inept at fixing crime in Kansas City.
Well, I think the solution is that somebody needs to call Governor Abbott and Governor DeSantis and let them know that Kansas City, Missouri, is open for business.
Yes,
Missouri. And let them send some buses that way. I mean, I think that's really, I mean, it worked for New York. It worked in Chicago. So I think, frankly, if you really want that, if you want them that bad, call Texas, send them that way. You got another destination. And the good news for Texas is it's a lot cheaper than sending a bus to New York. All you have to do is send them a couple hours up the road.
And if you're a local leader out on the Kansas-Missouri border, take that as your cue to appropriate some more funds into your law enforcement,
exactly.
Right? It's coming around the bend. It's coming down the hill. You know it's coming here. Do what you can to try to push back against the oncoming storm.
Oh, goodness. Oh, boy. I sure hope Texas isn't listening.
This week, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer bypassed an impeachment trial against DHS Secretary Mayorkas, effectively shielding Democrat senators from that pivotal vote. Constitutional law experts are now examining the implications of the precedent set by the Senate Democrats on Wednesday when they killed the impeachment trial for Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, effectively dismissing it. With us now to discuss what Senate Democrats did to Tea Party did to Senate Democrats is Tea Party Patriots Action Honorary Chairman Jenny Beth Martin. Jenny Beth, thank you so much for joining us here tonight.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
So, Jenny, the articles of impeachment against Mayorkas were serious. They warrant, I think, serious consideration and a full and fair trial by the full Senate. But Chuck Schumer clearly didn't agree. Why do you think he moved to dismiss, and does he really think that Mayorkas is doing that great of a job?
I think that he moved to dismiss because he could, and he could get away with it, and he could sweep everything that's going on at the border under the rug, and that's precisely what he did. And in doing so, he has completely obliterated impeachment. There's no reason for a United States Senate to ever have a trial again because the precedent has now been set that if the House passes articles of impeachment, the Senate can completely ignore them.
Man.
And frankly, that's what they do when it is with a Democrat. They are doing this with Mayorkas. The trial with Bill Clinton years ago was extraordinarily short, and they don't take it seriously when it's happening to a Democrat.
So does the Senate have any constitutional authority to rule that articles approved by the House do not state impeachable offenses without even having a trial? I mean, is there anything that we can point to in the Constitution that says Schumer just should not do this?
Well, I think that we just have to understand that no matter what it says, that the Senate is going to do what they do. We're dealing in a situation right now, and I know we need, I can go back and discuss your point, but we're dealing in a situation right now where we truly have a double standard when it comes to justice in this country. And what is happening to President Trump with the endless trials, the endless accusations, the endless threats and indictments against him versus what we see when it comes to Democrats is shocking. And it is something that I don't think any of us have really ever experienced in our life before. So I think that it's completely wrong. The Constitution does not say anything at all about shielding senators from taking tough votes, but what we saw happen this past week truly does shield them from having to listen to the evidence or to even really take a tough vote. When impeachment entered into the Constitution, the intention was for there to be a trial with the entire Senate, not to brush it under the rug and not to send it even to a smaller committee, but for the people who are elected, the senators, to actually do their job and do what they are supposed to do and have a fair trial. But we're not seeing that.
You know, earlier today, obviously on a completely different issue, it was related to Trump's hush money trial. The left just wants power. And so, you know, you try to understand these tactics in terms of either constituents or some sort of policy principle, and you just can't do that. It's really about making sure that the person that they want to be in power to rule over you maintains that power. So when I'm thinking about the politics of impeachment, you know, that was certainly one, you know, that the Senate Democrats were hoping to avoid. But it just seems to me that the bigger issue was they wanted to avoid having a vote on immigration. They didn't want to have to publicly support Joe Biden's failed immigration policies. I mean, do you think that has, you know, do you think that type of politics is playing a role here?
Yes, I think that it was. Mayorkas has lied to Congress. It's mind-boggling. But what is happening at the border, he said that he has operational control of the border. He doesn't have control of the border. They are not following the law. They are ignoring the law. Every single person basically who enters the country right now through an entry point is being allowed to stay in the country. That's not how our law is supposed to work. And then the people who are getting away, the known gotaways, and even the unknown, because we know there are people who we don't even know about who are still getting away. Those are people who don't want the United States government to know they're here, because if you went through an entry point, you could get through pretty easily right now. So they're either coming from a country where they don't want America to know that they have come from that country, or they're carrying drugs or other illicit material, or they're doing something extraordinarily bad when it comes to human trafficking, because even some of the human trafficking that is happening can go straight through the entry points at this point. The United States Senate doesn't want to expose that. They don't want to have to deal with that, certainly not in an election year.
You know, we are a democracy. And let me take that back. We are a republic, right? Which is a representative democracy. We don't believe in mob rule, majority rule, if it's going to trample over the rights of the minority. But just like you said, we have a very unfortunate precedent here. We have a situation where the majority the majority in the Senate thinks that they can just dismiss impeachment charges of any kind going forward. Can you elaborate a little bit more about, how dangerous this is and what it could mean for the future?
Well, I think that what it means at this point, the Senate is a body that works based on tradition. So when a precedent has been set, they lean on that precedent for how they will act in the future. And now that the precedent has been set that they can ignore the duty that they have to have a trial for impeachment and just set it aside and not actually go through with that, that is what is going to happen in the future. Now, if an impeachment, as long as it's someone who they don't want to see removed from office, if it is somebody who they want to see removed from office or they think it is politically expedient to have that trial, you better believe they're still going to have the trial.
Yep.
But if they don't want to do that, then they won't. So let's say that Trump were to get reelected in the future and the House is controlled by Democrats and they go forward with an impeachment. I imagine that they would, and who knows what it would be an impeachment for. I just figure that if that is the scenario, we probably can expect another impeachment of Trump, which would be a disaster. But what I can imagine from the Democrats in the House. Well, if the Democrats controlled the Senate, I'm sure would continue to have it. A trial in that
yes,
case.
That's right.
If Republicans control the Senate, based on what has happened in the past, they still think they would have a trial because they're trying to be fair. But I think that we've got a double standard when it comes to justice in this country, and the Democrats do exactly what they want to do to have power, and the Republicans keep trying to play by the rules.
Yes. So listeners, if there's anything I think you can take away from this conversation, it's that elections have consequences. You have one party, which is exactly what you said, just wants power, and the other one that believes in the rule of law. And the you know one of the best rules that we need to follow, of course, is our U.S. Constitution. Jenny Beth, thank you 100%. So much. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. If folks want to connect with you, where can they find you online?
They can find me at teapartypatriots.org and Jenny Beth M on social media. And the most important thing we can do between now and November is secure elections and win elections.
Well said. Jenny Beth, thank you again for taking the time to join us.
Thanks for having me.
The legislature is still on first adjournment, and while the paperwork of the bills they pass are being processed by staff and delivered to the governor's desk for her to sign, veto, or let it roll into law without her signature, she has been busy with her veto, Ben, as I most certainly am quite frustrated with at the onset of our talk today. So she is setting up another busy veto session for the legislature when they come back. Joining us now to give us a preview of that veto session is the great Kansas Speaker of the House, Dan Hawkins. Mr. Speaker, thank you for coming online and joining us today.
Michael, it is certainly my pleasure. And boy, does the governor have a veto pen. She's got 11 of them out there so far.
Oh, my goodness.
And she's just starting.
Well, you see, John, I said it. I said, I have, you know, 5 to 7 bills I care about that she's vetoed.
Yep.
You added an extra 3, and now we have Mr. Speaker saying, well, technically it's 11 now.
Yeah, she's she's a piece of work.
There's 11 of them, but you know, out of that 11, Michael, there's a few that we probably just can't override. We just don't have the numbers, but
sure.
There's quite a few that we can. Senate Bill 233, which is the transgender, a non-affirming, actually we call it help not harm bill. I think we should be able to get an override on that. The sugaring bill, which is Senate Bill 434, probably not. I think we only had 72 or 73 votes on that one, so that's probably not going to work. We had the abortion reporting bill. We should actually get a really nice veto on that, as well as the abortion coercion bill. Rules and regs, possible. That one's that's House Bill 2648. And the plastic bags, probably not. We didn't get hardly enough votes. Well, we got enough votes to pass it, but not enough for a big override.
Okay, so
that was actually her first set. And then last Friday, she had a whole another set that she vetoed.
She really wants us to not use plastic bags at Dylan's. I really don't understand this why. Okay, anyway, moving on. So she has she has vetoed a number of bills, like you had mentioned, pregnancy center fundings, abortion coercion, your bill, help not harm, checks that we regulatory checks that we put on government bureaucracies. So much for being middle of the road. But what is this I hear about a bill that you guys had passed out increasing penalties for killing police dogs?
Yeah, that was just, I still don't get that one. Out of all of the bills for her to, you know, she's actually fairly predictable. All of these bills, I would guess that she would, but that one just surprised me. It really surprised me because her veto message said that, you know, that the penalty was maybe not in line with other penalties, and we've heard that objection, but quite frankly, get the other ones up where they should be instead of pulling this one down. That's my point. You know, when I found out it was only a $500 fine when you killed a police dog or a police horse or injured them, I thought, wow, we got to do something about this. And so we actually did some studying to see what other states had done. Some were much more severe penalties than what we use here in this one. I would say that these are kind of, I think we struck the right balance here. And I think we'll override her veto. We had probably, close to 100 people that voted yes for that. Now, it wasn't quite as good in the Senate, but there were some people that I think can be reached and hopefully, get them on board. This is a bill that just needs to, we just need to override her. It's horrible.
So like almost on all the other bills that you have passed, you guys have done your homework on this. So it's not like you're pulling this out of thin air saying that this is what you want to pass because you feel good. No, you see a problem, you research it, you try to fix it, and you craft a bill to fix that problem, and you send it to Laura Kelly's desk. And because she has an inability to let things go, she feels that she could veto this. Well, for listeners out there, I saw this on Twitter, and I thought this was very appropriate. So after she vetoed, that bill increasing penalties for killing or injuring police dogs, your office put out the Wicked Witch of the West. And you put Laura Kelly's face on it, and you painted it green, and you put the little caption down here: "I'll get you, law enforcement, and your little dogs too." And it's a shame you have to get there, because it's such common sense policy. And I'm not saying that this is, paramount, but it's the feature that tells you what's going on with every other bill that you guys are sending out to her desk. Pulling back the fourth regulatory state, making sure you can't push any type of abortion coercion. Transparency. 9 to 10 out of these bills here are really efforts of transparency, and Laura Kelly wouldn't even give you that.
Yeah, like abortion reporting. I mean, so you're going to veto because undoubtedly she doesn't want anybody to know why a person's getting an abortion. Don't you think that's an important thing to know? Because maybe there's some way that you can help that person, and then that baby could live instead of die through an abortion. I don't understand her when it comes to some of these items. And, of course, she's got so many. I mean, there's just so many things that she's going to veto yet to come. She's just started. There's 11 out there, but she has just started. The veto pen is going to be hot and heavy this week.
So, Dan, you mentioned, by the way, and, we talk about her being middle of the road. I think she's in a lane on the road, and she's in the middle. She's just in the middle of the left lane on the road. So, I think we got to keep that in mind.
I call it the left ditch, actually. Yeah.
That's good. That's better than my analogy. You mentioned there's more to come. Can you give us an idea? Obviously, the tax bill, my money is on veto. I think she, like Michael mentioned earlier, I think she's just used that consensus revenue as a cover. I think she's going to veto it. She'll just have to come up with some malarkey excuse for why. But I think she vetoes that. Can you talk about that?
Well, I think number one, she thought, which a lot of us probably thought, that they were going to adjust down the consensus revenue estimate would be adjusted down And instead, this year it's flat. Next year it's increasing again. They see, you know, a good economic forecast for next year. So I think that took that away from her. She was going to use that as part of her story about why she was going to veto the tax bill. Now she's got to come up with something different. And I think what she's going to do is she's just going to say, oh, it's too expensive. You know, when you add all of the things up that we're spending money on, that it's just too expensive and we're just not going to do it. So I actually think that with the vote that we had in the House, which was just a massive vote, 119 yes. to zero, massive. The Senate was 25-9, and I actually think that in the Senate they can come up with a couple. I want to do a veto override because I truly think that we'll show her that there are people out there that believe that, you know, it's time to give some of this money back to the taxpayers. You know, it's a state was never, especially a state the size of ours, was never meant to have $5 billion or $4.5 billion sitting in the bank in a rainy day fund holding, you know, money instead of giving it back to the citizens of the state, the taxpayers. So we're going to take an override attempt, and if it doesn't work, then we'll have to figure out what's left to do. But, you know, this will be her, third or fourth veto in a two-year period on taxes. She literally has never let a tax bill that we have presented her go into law. So this one's going to be the same way, I believe.
Yeah.
Now, I would love to see her, you know, make me wrong, you know. Go out there and do something that's right, Governor, and Dan Hawkins will admit, man, I called that one wrong, but I just don't think I'll be wrong. I think she'll veto it.
We're approaching double digits now since she's been in office of vetoing a tax relief provision. And I think you're exactly right. She might just say that's too expensive, even though when she's saying too expensive, she means, you know, $30-40 million, which in terms of the state budget is quite frankly, pennies. Not only that, but I looked at there are four Democrat governors, four states out there with a similar political makeup to Kansas, right? Republican legislature, Democrat governor, four Democrat governors who have signed income tax cuts that is bigger than what the legislature here in Kansas has put out there. And those four Democrat governors have signed it. So when she talks about it being expensive, it has no basis in reality. It's really just about what she wants and whether she can get, whether she can control, you know, Kansans' wallets or not.
Dan, with $5 billion in reserve, and that's obscene. That is, frankly, it's disgusting. It just enrages me that the state is sitting on that much of our money. How can she possibly justify not giving some of that money back? I don't know how do Democrats not insist on it?
Well, I think the Democrats are probably going to, some of them are going to say, no, Governor, we're not paying attention to you. We're going to vote for the tax cut. I think in the House, I think you'll see probably at least half of them that will stay on board even if she vetoes it. And so it'll be an overwhelming veto in the House. I think there is a possibility that in the Senate you could see a Democrat come on board, maybe a couple. The Democrats have been a lot more against this tax package in the Senate, and nobody can really figure out why. I don't know why they are, except that couldn't be that reason, because they didn't like flat taxes anyway. So I'm not sure what their deal was. Maybe it's just because the governor didn't like it. It's the reason why they didn't like it. They do tend to follow the governor a lot more than what the House member on the Democrat side of the aisle do. So it very well could be that they're just following the governor. But I think you're going to see some people say, listen, we need to return this. It is, you know, the end of the session. We don't have a whole lot of time left. By the time we get to vetoes, you know, it's going to be Monday and Tuesday of next week. The following week, not tomorrow or the next Tuesday, but it'll be the following week. And so we're at the end with not a whole lot of time to do much, so except just, you know, finish up the business of the legislature. So
is there, Mr. Speaker, are there any other bills that are heading to her desk that you think she might veto?
Yeah, you know, there's always stuff out there that she doesn't like. I mean, it's she is a veto queen. The budget bill she has on her desk right now, that'll probably be, you'll start seeing line item vetoes from her on that, maybe as early as Tuesday or Wednesday of this next week. It could be Friday. Friday would be the last day, because that's the last day that they have to veto anything. But I do think that we can see as many as 10 or 12 line item vetoes.
Jeez.
Which is not uncommon. I mean, I think last year she did 13 or 14. So, she's the most vetoing governor we've had. Probably you got to go way back in history to find one. Maybe in the early 1900s there was one that would do as many as she did. But they didn't do it every year. And every year she is the veto queen. She loves the veto pen. But she hates to be overridden, and so it's my job to make sure we get all of our folks on board and we override as many of them as we can. We might as well make her sick while we're doing it.
Okay, so you
and I'm saying that, and I'm saying that sick from overrides, not sick being sick.
Thank you for clarifying, Mr. Speaker. So while she might be the veto queen, it gives you the opportunity to be the override king. Can I say that?
Yeah, that'd be good.
Perfect. Well, Mr. Speaker, if folks want to connect with you, they can find you online at danhawkinskansas.com. Is that right?
Absolutely. Danhawkinskansas.com.
Perfect. Well, Mr. Speaker, thank you again for joining us this evening, and good luck for that upcoming veto session.
Yeah, can't wait. Thanks, Michael.
Let's open up those lines. I believe we got a caller. Ed, you're on the John Whitmer Show. How's it going?
Hey, okay. Thanks for taking my call. I see this stories about the speeders out here frustrating the heck out of me because they can't seem to figure out what to do about it. Well, about 70 years ago, I was speeding in Wichita, and this cop stopped me and said, I was 16. He said, I'm supposed to take you to jail for the speed over the limit you were doing. But since you don't have a driver, I'll let you off. So they must have had a law then. So now, when they stop them, impound their car, and take them to jail, have them spend the night in jail, I'll guarantee that happens a couple of times, and they're not going to speed no more.
Oh, I bet you're right. You know, we got to enforce the law. And
they got to get some backbone and to do some stuff like that.
And surprise, surprise, when you enforce the law, you deter bad actions. Isn't that right?
Yeah, but just tell the guy if we're speeding so much over the speed limit, hey, well, you're going to jail and we're going to impound your car. That's it. No question. No nothing. That'll stop it.
Thank you so much for the call, Ed. All right. Our next, Nick, you are on the John Whitmer Show. How's it going, my friend?
Wonderful. Some of my two favorite Republicans. I love it. Hey, listen, I just wanted to let you know that as a delegate for McPherson County, I was proud to vote for you, Michael Austin, for delegate at the RNC, and it was kind of interesting.
Nick.
There were some open mouths kind of shocked at that deal. But let me comment on this, too. I have met Mike Brown, and personally, I got a bad vibe from him. Anybody who talks in the third person, it's kind of weird anyway. Michael, you've always given me a good vibe. And John Whitmer, I love you, but he's always given me that pro-politician vibe. But by the way, John.
Hey, I can't be a pro-politician. I'm not an elected official.
I heard double standard mentioned more than once, so I was wondering, are those adult use or medicinal bourbon?
Oh, my God.
No. Now, listen, be godly and enjoy liberty, which is freedom with morality. And I'm not promoting vice nor idolatry, but just asking for consistent application of our principles of constitutional conservative republic.
Here comes. Nick, here comes. Go ahead.
Go ahead. So we need to be unified for the purpose of preserving this republic for our posterity.
Yes,
and
do.
Be hard on crime. Now, most important part, Ephesians 4:29-32. Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers. Grieve not the Holy Spirit of the Lord, whereby you are sealed unto the day of redemption. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice, and be kind to one another.
I agree with all of this.
Forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. God bless you, John.
Amen, brother.
God bless you, Nick.
He didn't bring up marijuana.
Look,
I am surprised.
Look, he had me at proud to vote for you, Michael Austin. So I didn't care. Whatever he said, I was already with him, John.
I like Nick. Nick is always reasonable. He's, Nick and I, and the thing is, we have incremental differences. Because I agree with him a little bit on marijuana. I mean, I could do the medical as long as it's, for a legitimate medical need that is prescribed by a doctor and filled by a pharmacist. That's about as far as I go on the marijuana stuff.
Nick, you're a great American. Thank you so much for that call.
You don't want to weigh in on the marijuana conversation.
Make sure you know that the weekly Wichita Pachyderm Club lunch.
This
Friday at noon.
We have got 4 minutes left. You don't have an opinion, or you're avoiding the question.
So I'm a conservative libertarian, right? Which is, I want limited government. I like that being done by following the Constitution. To have that done, when it comes to marijuana, I acknowledge both sides. One, you have a libertarian view, which is like, government shouldn't be getting involved in this in the first place.
Yeah, pass the Doritos.
At the same time, you also need to acknowledge a reality, right? Which is that, marijuana as it currently stands is used as, the sales of it is used by, drug dealers to pay for even worse drugs that are out there.
Yeah.
So there definitely needs to be legalization, but you got to have control. I mean, look at what's happening in Colorado,
right?
Look what's happening in other states.
And the other issue is it's still a Schedule I narcotic.
And that's the biggest thing,
This is my
too.
Biggest issue. Every state that has legalized is still violating federal law.
So the bigger issue, of course, is how do you get federal law to turn if this is what the policy that you want to do?
Call your congressman. I'll give you Ron Estes's cell number. Feel free to call him.
But I'm not going to put words in Nick's mouth, because obviously he's not here to defend himself. Though I would guess that he would probably say that part of getting the federal government to turn around on this issue is for states to act on it first.
Yeah, but that's cattywampus. Because the only reason the states are doing this is because Barack Obama chose to just pretend to just ignore them. That's how it all started. I'm going to direct my law enforcement agencies not to enforce the law. Well, you can't do that. You can't just choose which laws to enforce and which ones not to enforce. And that's where I fall on it. As long as it's illegal at the federal level, it should be illegal, period. You want to change it, change the law. There you go.
There's our 2 cents.
It's not even worth 2 cents.
In the meantime, have a great week and carry on, fellow deplorables.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.